This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Everybody, and welcome to episode number 151. What did you watch this week? My name is Mike.
Nope.
Yep.
Nope.
That's what I went with.
I veto that.
Unless you're going to go back and edit the recording, it's going to make it.
I do have that power.
I know, but...
And it's right at the beginning.
But the likelihood of it happening is pretty nil. So what's up? Did you watch some stuff?
I watched some stuff.
I didn't watch a lot of stuff, but I watched stuff.
Neither did I, but that's good because this will give us a chance this week to do what we talked about last week.
Umbrella Academy.
Really dig into the Umbrella Academy.
So what did you watch then?
Well, I'll go down through the CW shows because I'm all caught up on those.
All right, cool. Do we want to talk about the CW news now?
Oh, might as well because it's fan-fucking-tastic.
It kind of is, yeah. So, all right, I didn't watch Arrow, and I'm not going to. I'm just going to let you tell me about it.
It wasn't that bad. It was the Star City Slayer, and it was this person who was going around killing people. Killing bad people, I guess. But it turns out that the Star City Slayer was actually the guy that Oliver shared a cell with when he was in Slabside. The Weasley little guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he was, like, straight up murdering people.
For funsies?
He actually cut... he was killing people who had vigilante streaks to them. And he told Oliver, it was like a single white female kind of thing, you know, I'm trying to help you out. I'm making it so that we could be together again. And, he straight up cut Black Canary's throat, you know, Dinah. Of course, it's kind of ruined because we all see the flash forwards where she's alive in the future. So it took all the gravitas out of it, but he's straight up like right across the throat. And they had to cauterize her neck hole and get her to the hospital.
But did she lose her powers?
Not that we've noticed yet, but she's still in recovery.
Huh.
But yeah, then he, because, you know, apparently he's a genius, but he introduced some gas into Oliver's loft so that Oliver and Felicity and the kid there were all paralyzed so that he could come in and, you know, monologue for a while.
Super.
It wasn't bad. It was not a bad episode.
Okay.
We've done the flash forwards to the point now where we found out that... They did this really clever thing where there's this girl who kidnaps – well, she catches Oliver's son there. I can't remember his name. Whatever. Catches him and the other vigilantes and, you know, ties them all up. And she's trying to get information out of them. And then she discovers that this is Oliver's son. And she's like, oh, my God, I'm Felicity's daughter. And everyone goes, oh, my God, Felicity had a daughter. And then we go back to the present day and Felicity discovers she's pregnant. So, you know, keen tie-in right there. So, yeah. The thing is, this show is setting up the future as an abysmal place. Mm-hmm. Like, vigilantes have destroyed the city. The city's a shithole. Everybody hates everybody. Like, no good ever came of it. Oliver's gone. Presumed dead, I guess. Felicity's presumed dead, although they're like, no, she can't really be dead, but we saw her die in the explosion. And so the future ain't so bright. But now we know why.
Yeah. Well, okay, so let's just talk about Supergirl real quick.
Okay. This was actually a fun episode.
Actually, it really was. Manchester Black broke out of prison with Menagerie, Amore, and then Hat. Boom.
I literally looked it up online. I'm like, couldn't we give him another name? No.
It's Hat. Just Hat. He's an alien who has a bowler cap, has fifth dimension properties.
Yeah, it basically looks like Mixie's Piddleick's hat, except for in purple rather than...
Yes. Nia's getting some Fortress of Solitude training.
Yeah. Because at first she didn't want it. Now she does.
Yep. And, yeah.
We actually got, they were called the Elite, the bad guys. And the bowler hat could teleport them anywhere, anytime. So they were running around the world and being like, you can't catch us and we're going to fuck shit up.
Yeah, basically, which was kind of neat. Yeah,
it was.
We're going to do whatever we want.
They made a good evil team. And it was...
Oh, they called themselves the Elite.
Yes. So they were fighting for alien rights versus the Sons of Liberty, who are now... Or Children of Liberty. I want to call them the Sons of Liberty because we only ever see dudes.
Right, the Children of Liberty.
Of Liberty are fighting for human rights. So both factions are bent on taking innocent lives in order to prove that the other side is wrong.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
No, it's stupid. Well, it's just like the last week's episode when they announced that aliens weren't actually human. So they were protected by, you know, laws and stuff.
Yeah.
So if you murder them, it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways.
There have been aliens on this planet for years.
Right.
In this world.
Right.
And they're just now, wait a minute.
Yeah.
We just realized our laws don't protect them. Really?
Jews did not protect them.
Yeah.
So the president has got some satellite to shoot missiles at alien spaceships and even that come at Earth, which maybe isn't a bad idea.
But
in the long run,
it's one single satellite.
Yeah.
Which satellites orbit. And you know what? Space is 360 degrees.
Right.
So they could just like come around the backside.
Yeah. But someone reprograms it. So it fires it at the White House and Supergirl saves the day.
Yep. I'm reminded of the Family Guy episode of Empire Strikes Back when they're evacuating Hoth and they're like, okay, we could literally go in any of an infinite number of directions. It's space. It's wide open. But we're just going to travel straight ahead right through the enemy blockade.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of thing. You know, we're going to put a satellite up there that shoots down ships. Yeah. How's that going to work for you? Okay. It's not even just like, okay, we're watching this spot in front of us. It's above, below. I mean.
Right. It's all around us.
Every direction.
Yeah. Ben.
Logic.
Ben's offered to be the director of alien affairs. That's going to go well.
Just, you know, he just, oh, hey, I'm going to, yeah.
I know you murdered a bunch of aliens and we just got you out of prison on a loophole. But you want to have a high ranking government position?
And call it something nice, like Alien Affairs.
Yeah, not...
But you're really going to be in charge of murdering
the squad. Yeah, right. I mean, they're basically making the U.S. government in this show the Nazis.
Mm. Yeah. You know? Well, they softballed it with the Children of Liberty. You know, they were supposed to be the, essentially, the Nazi-esque type.
Yeah, the SS.
Yeah. And now they're like, oh, well, the government's going to join in with them because they believe in them and they like them. And, yeah, it's not the way that it – but we got one of the coolest things in this episode. We got the throwdown of the name Super Friends.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, even though it wasn't the actual Super Friends, it was really cool to hear her say, I've got Super Friends. Yeah.
No, that was cool. Oh, and Alex doesn't trust Baker anymore.
I don't care.
He doesn't, yeah.
But Alex and Lena are now working together because, you know, Alex is a keen scientific mind, apparently.
And must have been blocked out by all those memories of her sister being Supergirl.
Yeah.
And now it's come to the forefront.
Exactly. So now she's got a keen scientific mind. And so she's going to, you know, work with Lena on stuff together. Right. And they're making an unlikely pair because, you know, now that Lena has all that free time since her and James broke up because he's like, I'm not cool with you selling your superhuman secrets to the government.
Yep.
And she's like, oh, okay, then get out.
All right, brother. See you later. So, The Flash.
Yes.
This was a great episode, actually.
I
really enjoyed it.
It could have been better if they had given us more Grodd versus King Shark.
Yes, absolutely.
I was a little disappointed that it only came in at the very end, but still, it was great CGI fighting.
Honestly, it was. King Shark versus Gorilla Grodd. I remember we were concerned about it because how crappy CGI has been in the past. And it's like, oh, well, geez.
Manifest.
But this was good. The battle was good.
Yep.
You know?
I liked it. They did that stupid thing that I hate, which is starting, you know exactly what I'm going to say. They start the episode at the end.
Yes.
And Flash and Excess are laying there on the ground. They can't move. And King Shark, they're like, King Shark. And he comes stomping onto the ground. And then they go 12 hours earlier.
Yeah. I understand that the title of the episode is King Shark versus Gorilla Grodd. But to try to keep it a secret as to who was doing the mind control until they revealed it was Gorilla Grodd was stupid.
Yep.
Because we knew it was Gorilla Grodd.
Because it always is.
From the beginning.
Yeah.
But, and then you have, they're trying to talk to King Shark to ask him if he wants to take the, I don't know.
Medicare.
Okay, I was going to say the vaccine, but whatever, the antidote.
Yeah.
But, of course, he's going to kill, what's his face, Vibe. So Flash just injects him anyways, which is a violation of everything they said they were going to do.
Right. You used it as a weapon. I'm sorry.
I had to.
It's a supervillain.
He was going to kill you. He's a supervillain. Who gives a shit?
You didn't kill him. You literally cured him. You took away his powers.
Right.
And I get where they're coming from.
And then, but no. See, that leads at the end of the episode of, we're going to give Cicada the choice.
Yeah.
He's going to say no.
Right.
Spoiler.
Because he's going to say no.
Yeah.
And he wants them to die.
Yeah.
So he's going to say, no, I haven't finished my work yet.
Yeah.
I also love that in this episode, it was the first time that somebody actually said, and it was Sherlock, I think it was actually Jesse L. Martin actually goes, huh, Cicada's been pretty successful all along. Pretty sure he must have somebody helping him. And they're all like, really? Whoa. Even Sherlock didn't come up with that.
Well, we had to make up for the fact that, you know, he hasn't been around for this season.
Yeah. Glad he's feeling better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Glad sure was sitting a lot, though.
He was. Actually, he really was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he, in real life, he really is
right.
Not doing well.
No, he's not doing well at all. He's very unhealthy, unfortunately. So it was legit good to see Joe back on the
yes.
show. You know,
yeah. Whatever.
But it's still like, if you...
Oh, it was still a great episode.
It was still a great episode. And the fight between... King Shark and Gorilla Grodd was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, the guy, King Shark, like, they determined that there's still some of the black matter going on in his brain because he kind of transforms a little bit and then comes back. That probably hurt. At first, I thought they were going to make him like the Incredible Hulk.
Mm.
He just become King Shark right. when he wanted to and then go back to human form. But he chooses to get...
Vibed, essentially.
Well, he chooses to become King Shark again with the knowledge that he'll probably never not be able to be King Shark.
Right. Because basically, Gorilla Grodd can't affect his brain because there's so much animal in it. So he can't affect his brain and mind control him like he can everybody else.
Correct. So he becomes King Shark again to stop Gorilla Grodd and save the day, and he does. But he seems to have more control over who he is because he doesn't just attack anybody randomly. Right.
And at the end, he's talking to his
yes.
girlfriend there.
Yeah. And, you know, so it was a good episode.
Yeah. He may be a force of good at this point. You know,
yep.
he may actually work with them now. They probably can't cure him, but that's just to keep him around. You know, they really need to make Gorilla Grodd the villain of a season.
Yeah. Not just an episode arc here and there.
Yeah. Like, he has amazing powers. He's super strong. He's super fast. He's agile. He has mind control abilities.
Yep.
In the comics, he could actually, like, transpose his consciousness into other people, which we've seen him do, you know, when he talks through other people.
Right.
So he could do so much more than just, like, being a one-off creature of the week. I know that we knew who was doing it all along, but it was great, that scene when he took over Caitlin and Cisco.
Yep.
And I love, too, when Excess was like, yeah, but he can't affect our brains because speedsters move too fast, right? And they're like, no, not at all. Oh, my God, the Flash Museum straight out lied. That was just great. But it looks like from the preview that I saw, we're wrapping up the Cicada storyline.
It seems to be with a lot of season left.
Yeah. I know that there have been... set photos. They say that Godspeed is coming, one of the other speedsters.
Yeah.
He looks like he's coming. Somebody dressed as him has been seen in certain scenes of the show. So maybe we're doing a split scene, you know, a split season where we finish up with Cicada and then we introduce somebody new. I don't know.
Yeah, but what are we, 13, 14 episodes into the season already?
Something like that.
I mean, we're pretty far into the season for them to be to launch a new like character like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Unless they're just like, screw it, who cares?
So then there was the big news that popped up this week.
Yeah, pretty substantial news, actually. We had heard rumors and we had talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, with Crisis on Infinity Earths.
Yep.
Yeah, Crisis on Infinity Earths, the coming next December, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, oh, you know, the rumors we had heard is that they're going to do away with Arrow, Supergirl, and Legends.
Yep.
And keep Flash.
Yep.
They're going to bring Black Lightning into this universe, finally. Mm-hmm. And they're going to launch Batwoman, Superman, and Constantine.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, geez, that'd be kind of cool, blah, blah, blah. And I could go for a new Superman show.
Mm-hmm.
I love Constantine. I think everyone we know does. And the Batwoman character that was introduced last year was, I liked the world, and I'd love to see more of it.
Yep.
I want Bruce Wayne to be gone, though.
Well, see, that's the problem, is now that Gotham is ending, they have a door opening that they could have a Batman TV show.
Okay. So, it's like, oh, I wonder if that'll happen, blah, blah, blah. Then we talked about, you know, how Arrow's been around for as many seasons as it has, and, you know, be kind of weird if the show that started it all were to go away, but everything else keeps going. Maybe they'll bring the character back, blah, blah, blah. And then 2 days ago now, at this point, we're recording this on Friday, March 9th, so it's like 2 days ago. Steve Amell went on, did a Facebook Live thing, and he basically announced, he put it on all his social media, but he announced that next season will be the last season of Arrow, and they're only doing 10 episodes.
Exactly.
Which kind of lines up, starting in September, ending in December with the crossovers.
Yep.
And he thanked everyone.
That's the only show so far.
Yeah, he thanked everyone and said, you know, he's really enjoyed the character and yada, yada, yada. But, you know, it's definitely time to move on. And then someone made a comment. He goes, no, we're not going to be Supernatural. I just, like, perfect. Because the Facebook video was, like, 9 minutes long that he did. And, like, people were commenting. And he had read something. And he's like, no, we're not going to be, like, Supernatural.
Outstay or welcome.
Yeah. So, but, you know, he definitely seemed like, hey, you know what? This show is taxing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I bet. You know, he's got to stay physically fit for it the whole time.
Right.
All the time. Because he does all that stunt work.
Exactly.
Has those shirtless scenes. So.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see if all those rumors come to pass. But, I mean, that definitely starts down the right road with what's going on with Arrow. And I like Supergirl a lot, but this is its fourth season already.
And this season really is weak.
Yeah, it is. It is.
It's become weaker and weaker.
They went down a path they shouldn't have gone down, basically, in my opinion.
When they got rid of Calista Flockhart, the show really started going downhill because she was an amazing character. And she really kind of tied things together. And then when they started bringing in, oh, let's make James Guardian. And then Wynn went away so that he could go join the Justice Society. And they, you know.
But I do like Brainiac.
Oh, I do like
Brainiac.
Yep.
But I know what you're saying, but I feel like this season, especially with this whole Children of Liberty angle, I don't guess everything is in wrestling terms. I don't really like it at all.
Yeah. I'm not a fan either.
So if they get a half season next season as well, but at the same time, this is a show that was canceled and revived. So we were only going to get the first season and then they brought it over to CW. So canceled and revived. And I think they should be happy they got to get, you know, 5 seasons end of it.
I can foresee, at the very least, if they're doing this Crisis on Infinite Earths to kind of reboot things like DC loves to do, Doomsday Clock, I could see, at the very least, Supergirl's universe gets merged with ours.
Yeah.
I say ours, but I mean,
like, I know what you mean.
Arrow, Flash, all the ones that are there. And then if they did fold Black Lightning in there as well, you know, again, it's a merging of the universes. So.
But I wouldn't have no problem with the Superman show if they, like I say, if they did it right. But if they kept the accoutrements, if you will, to a minimum. Like with Supergirl, you had her sister Alex and the whole, you know.
DEO?
DEO. Don't have stuff like that. Just have Superman. Mm-hmm. You know. He doesn't need a team. Like, I think that's the problem. Not the problem, but I think that's one of the key things, like, every single one of these shows has a team. You know, Flash has his team so he can get the job done.
I'm trying
done.
To think of a successful
Supergirl
show
Supergirl has
had
his team.
In the past pick a time where it was just a single person. They didn't have a team.
Well.
House? No.
No.
Person of Interest? Nope. Firefly? Even John Doe, which was really good.
John Doe was excellent.
Had his team, yeah. You know? You've got to have the supporting players, otherwise you're just following one person. Okay, I'll give you an example.
Well, you'd have Lois and Jimmy, and you'd have, you know, Perry, and you'd have the cast that's there. But, like, a whole team that knows his identity, that works with him, and that's never what Superman's been. Other than the Justice League is what I mean,
I was thinking Justice League. I was also thinking, like, New Adventures of Superman, you know, or The Adventures of Lois and Clark.
The New Adventures of Superman, I guess I remember the show, but I don't remember him having a team.
No. It was never about a team, but there were always supporting characters that were front and center as well.
Right, and you can have those, mm-hmm. but they're not working with him while he fights crime, mm-hmm. and he doesn't have a radio piece in his ear where he's communicating back to Central Base or whatever about what's going on. That's what I mean by that.
Okay.
You know, because he's Superman. For crying out loud.
He don't need that.
But you know...
He's apparently going to punch out Dr. Manhattan.
Sure enough. So I find that interesting. If they do with this whole DC universe
reboot. I'm sure we're going to hear a lot more of it in the coming months.
Oh, yeah.
Because we're winding up to season finales.
Yep.
If Arrow's already made this announcement and they've already got a plan for 10 episodes of the next season. I mean, that's something you would have heard in the summertime usually. You know, oh, by the way, they're going to be coming back, but it'll only be for a limited time. Well, like, they're telling us now.
Last December, they basically told us next year's the
Crisis
on Infinite Earth. So, I mean,
yep.
They've obviously known where they're going back then.
Yep.
Legends comes back April 1st. I'm excited for that.
Thank God. Yeah. And I really hope, in true Legends fashion, that they play up the fact that it's April Fool's Day.
Oh, they have to.
It would be great if they had, you know, filmed it in advance and just, like, done some kind of awesome thing for April Fool's Day. Like, try to tell us that half the crew's dead and they've been replaced by cats or something and...
I don't know.
They've been able to, the whole episode.
They've been able to like see. I wish Legends would stay around because they can. They basically at this point they can do anything and it doesn't matter.
Pretty much.
They did an episode of puppets. They did a musical. They did. I mean, like they can do anything. It doesn't matter.
Bebo versus the devil.
Exactly. They can legit do anything. So, you know, it's funny. I was looking up information. I was looking up for my notes for The Good Doctor. And I guess I don't fucking realize the thing. It's on season 2.
Yep.
Like,
this was a gross episode.
Kind of caught me off guard.
With the tumor?
Oh, the guy that's got the 200-pound tumor on him?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
It's kind of gross.
Yeah.
Especially watching them, like cut away parts of it and then, like, flip him so that they could read. Oh. Yeah. Tough episode, though, because... Everyone's dealing with some, you know, the older doctor there. I still never remember his name. You know, he's trying to find out if he has cancer. He's waiting for the test results. And Cuddy, Lisa Edelstein, does a great job. But she's like, you're not my most annoying patient. I'm not going to push it. He's like, can't you call in a favor? She goes, oh, I sure can. I'm not wasting on you.
Yeah, exactly.
she's great that way. She's like, you're going to get the answer when you get the answer. You either won the lottery or you're going to die. You know, one of two things. But Sean manages to make two good catches.
Yep.
An abused baby.
A baby who is, they believe to be abused because of a blood clot in its head.
Yep. And there was literally no other explanation until he suddenly went, wait.
Yeah.
Something happened when she was in the womb.
Yeah.
And
the baby was only about 7 weeks old and the injury was... I think when they use, like, the suction cup on the head to pull the baby out, basically, is what it comes down to.
Yeah.
It caused this damage, but it didn't do it, but it just started re-bleeding recently.
Yeah.
And then the other one was when they thought they had no choice but to cut off what tumor they'd cut off and leave the rest.
Mm-hmm.
And, what's his name? Melendez? Melendez?
Yeah.
Yeah. Demands that Sean be brought in. To have him consult.
Because he's good at circling.
And Han's stuff. Like, you're just wasting time and showboating and blah, blah, blah. And Sean comes in and basically he's like, he saves the day. He's like, if you clamp the main artery and da, 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 and then...
They're like, but then he'd lose the use of his legs. Well, not if we relieve pressure every 10 minutes.
And let the blood in. It's, you know, and that's what they do and they're successful.
Yeah.
And so then Sean tries to go talk to Han to demand his job back.
And yeah, in and only see, a way he would do it.
And then, so is Han the bad guy?
I am a surgeon!
Is Han the bad guy in all this?
No. He's a little bad, but at the same time, I respect him for sticking to his guns. And like he said, Sean made those great calls.
Yeah.
But he only would have made one of them if he was in surgery.
Yeah.
If he hadn't been in pathology, they never would have made that call on the baby, and that woman would have been in jail, never seen her baby again.
Yeah.
You know? He said, you've made great calls and great saves in pathology. And, yes, we used your help this time, but he also wasn't doing the surgery. He came in, told them how to fix it, and then left.
Right.
And they did the work.
See, here's my thing, though, and they haven't brought this up yet in the show. And Sean, I don't know if he can... Again, we're talking about a fictional show, I realize. And anyways, but like, it's not like he lucked into what he's doing. He worked hard, mm-hmm. harder than anyone his whole life to get here.
Mm-hmm.
And just to have this one doctor come in and be like, no, I'm going to take it away because I don't think you should be doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of makes him the bad guy.
Oh, it does.
You know,
there's definitely aspects of it that are wrong in that respect. But I can also see it from the other point of view where it's like, you know, Dr. House was never in surgery.
Right.
Cameron was in surgery.
Right.
You know? Chase was in surgery.
Right.
Because he was a surgeon. But House was a diagnostician.
Right.
And he did a damn good job of that. He didn't want to get involved with the patients. And I understand they're different people. Sean
right.
wants to get involved. Sean wants to be in surgery. But it's also because with autistic people, they don't do change well. You know?
Right.
They get set on one idea. They get set on one path. And more than anybody else, they cannot handle change. So it's crippling for him. And I get that, but...
But then they did the thing on the show that just makes me go, well, it's not like they're canceling the show.
Exactly.
This is stupid, where Han's like, if you don't accept that you're a pathologist and leave, then I'm going to have to call security. And if I call security, then you're getting fired. And then the next scene is basically not him being fired, but him cleaning out his locker.
Yep.
So,
and he breaks the little scalpel he uses as a like touchstone.
Right, as his brother's.
Yep.
So essentially at the end of the day, the main character that the whole show is around, and if he's not there, then there is no show. He's been fired?
Yeah. Oh, it's not going to happen.
But this was so stupid.
It's just like that thing I was telling you about with Black Canary.
Yeah.
You know,
they cut her throat, but we've already seen her in the future.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And she's talking and walking right. and fine, so.
Yeah. Fake peril.
Yep.
The Rookie was really good.
Holy God, do I love that show.
This one was called Manhunt, and basically a prison...
No, wait. We had the opening bit.
Oh, okay.
Where they were doing the training video, or the recruitment video.
Yes.
And they went through like 50 takes because she kept messing up her line, and they finally got it done, and they played it for everybody, and, you know, people were like, I think you should tell him. No, you should tell him. It was your idea. Yeah, there was no video. We just fucked with you.
Right.
And the Sarge even had a thing of popcorn. They made him do all that for nothing.
Yeah, you got punked.
Which nobody says punked anymore.
No, but they did on that show.
Yeah.
So prison transport with severe offenders crashes.
Yeah, coming from the court.
Yeah. And 7 prisoners escape.
Out of 20. So that's not a bad ratio.
Yeah, and there's a couple dead ones, and a guard loses a leg.
Yep. And then his life.
Yep. And then he dies in front of Nolan.
Yep.
They catch.
But not before saying, tell Beth I love her.
Basically. Then they catch 2 of them straight away, and then the rest.
Which was funny. He's like, we have 7 prisoners on the loose. Make it 6. All right. Good job. Make it 6. So we have 6 prisoners on the loose. Make it 5. You know, if we keep this up,
we'll be home by dinner. Yeah. But I highly, did you want a Tommy Lee Jones scene?
Oh, I so
bad
a Tommy Lee Jones scene.
But we didn't get that.
We need to check every house, chicken house.
Yeah.
So
basically the whole episode is them looking for the rest of these prisoners.
Yep.
And at the same time, we have a new character that's introduced, and she is a...
She reminded me of the guys from Criminal Minds.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. It's not. She's a specialist in crisis negotiation or hostage negotiation or whatever. And basically, like, her demo is she has a fake bomb on her, and she's like, you can only say 10 words to me.
Yeah.
And, you know.
And she points at different people. She's like, you. Hi, I'm Lucy Chen. Boom.
Oh, bang.
Yeah. And I love how she, like, set it up. She didn't just have a bomb. She said, you know, and just so you know, I've got shrapnel in here, screws, nails, yes. And
I've soaked in my own filth.
In my own filth, so you're going to die of a secondary infection if you're not dead initially. Yeah.
And you can't shoot me because this is a dead man switch. Mm. And so my brain, I'm like, we're going to see something like that later on today.
Yep.
We did.
And Bradford goes to jump her, and she turns around, she's like, bang. Bam. It's like, one split second more with a hat trick. Yeah, but instead, this place was a blender.
Yeah. But of course, Nolan makes the right statement.
Mm-hmm.
It gives her pause.
And I really liked what he said to her later on, because she's like, I've looked through your file and there's no record of you ever having any kind of training like this or any kind of experience.
There's nothing I see that would make you a good person for this.
Right. For, you know, being able to connect with somebody like that. And then they get the call that the prisoners are there.
Yeah.
So later on, he's like, hey, just so you know, I basically have had to deal with, he was talking customer service.
Yes, customer service.
You know, he's like having to deal with a woman who her ceramic tile isn't in and she's got a dinner party coming up this weekend and she's freaking out, you know, having to deal with that person or having to talk to your child about going to school when they don't want to go.
Yeah.
It was cool because he made it relatable. He's like, you know, you don't have to be a police officer to, or FBI to get this kind of training, you know, just dealing with people in general.
And then he is distracted most of the episode trying to find out who Beth is. And then eventually he finds her by chance. She's another guard. Her name's Elizabeth. And essentially it was a, like, missed romantic opportunity.
Yep.
Where they were friends and she always thought he was going to ask her out and he never did. And now he regrets it. So that's like, okay, that's a, Nolan's going to learn that lesson to ask out this. Was that the actress?
She looked familiar, but not familiar enough that I was like, oh, it's
she
her.
Wasn't the person of interest?
I don't think so. No.
In life?
Shy?
Yeah, that wasn't her?
No.
I thought it was her.
No. I'll look her up right now, but.
So they go through the city and they catch the people. West hooks up with a fugitive who his dad dealt with. And basically he leaves his dad.
Great actor, too.
Yeah, he is. And basically he puts doubt in West's mind that his dad's a dirty cop.
Yeah.
Basically, like, hey, you know what? When I was helping your dad and I was giving him all the information, being an informant for him, then, you know, he looked away a lot of the times on things with me.
It was Sarah Shine.
I thought so.
She looked a lot different.
Boom!
But not that big.
No, no.
She looked a lot different.
I thought it was her. I didn't look it up, but I thought it was her. So anyways, it was the voice.
Yeah.
So anyhow, so this guy puts doubt in West's mind that his dad's a goody-two-shoes cop like he's always presented himself to be.
Right.
And he's like, oh, if you don't believe me, just look at my file. Oh, he goes, yeah, you know, I was good for your dad when I was giving him informing for him. But then when I didn't have any more information for him, you know, he planted that gun on me.
Yeah.
Oh, so you're saying he set you up for murder and commit? He goes, oh, no, I killed that guy. They just didn't have any evidence till your dad planted the gun.
Exactly. Like, he was flat out. I love some of the stuff he said, too. You know, yeah, one day your dad grabbed me and he was like, tell you what, if you can outrun me, I'll let you go. We tied. And he's like, my dad's really fit. He goes, I was on crack.
He goes like, oh.
Yeah. I was 20 pounds lighter.
Yeah, he goes, oh, yeah, well, I'm sure my dad caught you. No, we tied. By just everything. And then he's like, oh, you don't believe me? Just go ahead and look at my file.
Mm.
So he had put down West's mind.
Yep.
Bradford basically, you know, finds out. He gets the lesson that action isn't always what takes care of things. Words can help. And then decides he wants to take the sergeant's exam.
Mm-hmm.
And I like how his sergeant's basically like, I think it's about time.
Yeah. Because now that I know that it's her, Sarah Shai's character
is trying to lure him away.
Yeah, trying to get the sergeant. She's like, look, we've worked together before. You should come work with me. He's like, work for you. She's like, no, I wouldn't be like, well, kind of. And then when Bradford's like, yeah, I want to take the sergeant's exam. And he's like, good, it's about time. And she goes, yeah, I hear there's going to be some openings soon.
And yeah, it was just a good episode.
I loved the one that they caught that was in the guy's trunk. Yes. You know, Nolan and his partner had a checkpoint, basically.
Yes.
And they were checking everybody, and they were saying, pop the trunk.
And this guy was like, really shakes nervous. His head, no, and he looks in the back seat, and his booster seat's not there. And he's like, oh, I was picking up my daughter. And then there's no kid in the back seat. And he points like, is your kid in the trunk with him? And he's like, yes. And he writes something down. I don't know what it is.
Nope.
And you see the guy driving to his garage and goes, okay, I did what you asked. We're here. Can you let my daughter go? And then he does. He drove it to the Sally Port of the police station.
There were like seven cops, all with their guns drawn. They're just like, put your gun on the ground. Like, it was great that it wasn't one or two. Like, they yes. literally had a half dozen of them waiting.
Yeah. I thought it was awesome.
It was. But, you know, like his partner or his TO said, you know, she was like, that was a big risk. She's like, you're letting him go? He goes, yeah. Otherwise, his daughter was going to die. She's like, you're taking a big risk.
Yep.
Well, hopefully it pays off. And he did. He pulled right into the Sally Port.
I'm like, that's awesome. So I'm going to tell you a real story real quick.
Okay.
All right. So we had this incident the other night, and one of the troopers pulls over a car because of a taillight issue.
Okay.
And she's suspended, and he's on bail conditions, and da-da-da-da. But it's the end of his shift, and he just wants to go home. So he just writes her a summons for the suspended license and says, have someone come drive the car. And he leaves. Right.
He left her there to drive away?
No, no, no. He said, have someone come drive the car.
But she still had the keys.
Correct.
Okay.
So anyways, she said she would. So he took her out. So he wrote her a summons and, you know. So he leaves. And he's thinking about it. He goes, oh, crap. I forgot to tell her why I pulled her over. Because as soon as she walked up, she says, I don't have a license. And so he turned around, heads back up to the Big Apple, goes inside, and he goes up to her. He goes, hey, I just want to let you know the reason why I pulled you over is because the red's missing off your taillights. You have a bright white light exceeding to the rear, which da-da-da-da-da. And then I look over at him, and he's standing there at the counter with two bottles of McGillicuddy. And I go, what are you doing? And the guy goes, oh, should I not buy these? You're in bail conditions. You can't possess alcohol. No, you shouldn't. No. He's like, no, you can't possess alcohol. And he goes, so I shouldn't buy these then. And he goes, no. He goes, if you complete that transaction, I'm going to put you in cuffs. I'm not going to buy them then.
Jesus, jumped up Christ.
So he leaves, and he goes down, and he's waiting to go across the Gardner Randolph Bridge, and he sees a car turn over, a car drive right over the median. And so he goes to follow him, ends up getting in a pursuit, and then the guy calls in a 911, and I get him. And I go, well, the officer, he's like, this officer has no reason to pull me over. He was drunk. And I go, well, sir, you know, he said you drove over the median. Well, I know I did. Okay, well, that's a traffic infraction. That gives him a reason to pull you over. You're making things worse for you. And like, you went from a traffic infraction to a felony now because you're failing yourself. I'm going home, and you're not following me home. Okay, what's your address? Oh, I live at Whitefield Road. Okay, so I put in the notes, like, he says he's going home, and this is where he lives. Do you have any weapons? No, I don't have any weapons on me. Have you been drinking tonight? That shouldn't matter.
That's a yes.
So, anyways, answer that. So, follows the guy home. The guy runs in his house. His mom wakes up. What are you doing? Not to do anything wrong, Mom. They didn't have a reason to pull me over. Why are all these police here? Give me that phone. Sir, hello? And I go, hi, it's 911. What did my son do? He drove over a median, didn't stop. Now he's in trouble. Well, did the police have permission to come in your house? Yes, of course they do. Okay. That's all the recorded line. I was like, Mom, what are you doing? I didn't do anything wrong. She goes, yes, you did. You're an idiot.
Unfortunately, that's not against the law.
Right, right. So he ends up getting arrested, and he's like, and so going in at midnight, like he was trying, he didn't get in until 4:15 in the morning. And he calls up, he's just like, I'm just trying to get home. That's all I want to do is go home. He goes, I was hitting 18 hours on at midnight.
Jesus.
Yeah. Sorry. I thought it was funny because of some of the things that we saw that.
Yeah.
Was relatable.
Yep.
So I shouldn't buy these. No. If you complete that transaction, I will arrest you. I'm not going to buy them. It was a great episode of The Rookie.
It was. It was great. Every time I watch this show, I go, my God, I can't believe how much I like this show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I genuinely look forward to it every week. And of course, at the end, he gets that woman to sign her book, and
yes,
she puts her phone number in there. And right. it was so unexpected but smooth. You know, she just like signs the book, and then she hands it to him, and he kind of like, she walks away. He looks down at it, and he's like, "What?" And he whips out his phone, and he starts calling, and she picks up her phone. "Hello, who's this?"
He's like, "Is it too soon?"
She's like, "Oh, hi." It was very charming.
It was very charming.
The way that it went down. So,
did you watch This Is Us?
I did.
What'd you think?
The Graduates?
Yes.
These episodes make me hate the Pearson kids more and more.
All right. So, Randall really pissed me off this episode.
They all pissed me off.
Mostly Randall. The others didn't. I mean, Kevin relapsed. That happens. And he tried to cover up and hide. That's an alcoholic. That's what they do.
Yeah. At least he was fairly honest at the end. And he's like, "I'm not going to lie to you."
Yes. No. So that didn't bother me. Kate went into premature labor, water broke.
Because, of course, that has to happen.
Right, exactly, because we have to have more risk.
It was cool the way that they were talking about it at the end when she was like, they were juxtaposing.
Yes, when they graduated high school to this now, yes.
Yep. Two graduations.
Yeah.
You know, her saying, you know, "This baby can't die."
Yeah.
And they were like, "No, it's not gonna." And suddenly it's their voices, but it's the young versions
yes.
of them. And,
so that was pretty cool. Toby was awesome. Like,
of course,
community college graduation, but he has to make a big deal out of it because, you know,
he even got himself a cap and gown.
Yes, yes.
And he invited the four other people who were
who are graduating as well and got them all gowns.
He's like, "This one guy came to this country in 1952 and blah, blah, blah." He has this whole story. And she's like, "How old is he?" "Way too old." "Way too old."
So it was cool. That whole part of it was cool.
Yep.
Kevin relapsed and didn't bother me at all. It bugged me. That's what happens with alcoholics, unfortunately.
I know.
They relapse and they try to hide it.
Yeah.
They lie because that's what makes them addicts.
What am I supposed to tell him? Well, you could do like I didn't tell him you have a meeting with Soderbergh.
But then he's honest with Toby on the phone, like, "I've been drinking all day. Like, I can't drive her. We need to get
And you couldn't hear Toby's side of the story.
No.
You know, you couldn't hear him on the other end, but he's like, you know, "Yeah, Kate went into labor. We need to call an ambulance." "Well, she can't drive. You know, her water broke." "I can't drive. I've been drinking all day."
"Yeah.
I know. I'm sorry. I know. I just, and then he hangs up.
Yeah.
But he's like, "I got to call an ambulance now." So I half expected to see Toby come into the hospital and check on Kate and then just cold cock.
No, Kevin. All he did was just put his hand up at Kevin, like, "I'm not dealing with you right now.
Yeah, because he's been such a rock and things like this, you know, "You almost endangered my child," you know.
Yes.
I could have seen him just easily just knocking Kevin right to the floor. And I kind of would have liked it.
Yeah.
You know, because it would have been cathartic for Toby at this point to finally get some of that frustration out in a better way than just like having a fight with Kate.
We got depression. We get to see a young mom. I can't think of her name. I don't think it's Beth. It's not Beth. That's Randall's wife.
Yeah.
Anyways, we got to see her basically after Jack had died, how she was dealing with it and how he wasn't there for the graduations and she wanted to film it and on and on and on, and just how bad it affected her. I liked it when the guy asked her out. She's like, "I'm just going to go buy this," and walks off.
Yeah, like literally she was just, she didn't have anything else to say. But yeah, it was really realistic the way that they did that. Where, you know, Miguel was like, "What are you doing?" And she's like, "I can't be in there right now. I can't be anywhere. I can't breathe." He was supposed to be here. You know, when you experience a kind of loss like that, especially when it's around the big things, you know, holidays, anniversaries, etc.
Right.
It hits you all at once, and you get those feelings of this is never going to happen again. You're never going to be with that person again. They're never going to be around, and it's just overwhelming. So she really played that up well.
Yeah.
And then Miguel was like, "I'm going to hold the camera. All you have to do is
just be there." Yeah.
Yep.
So that was, and then Kate had refused to go to her high school graduation.
That's where she was pissing me off because she was being an indignant little shit, and you know.
So that was Kid Kate pissing you off. Okay, that makes sense. And this is why her graduating from college was so special to her mom, because like she won. I liked it when Kate had her cap and gown on and she's wanting to take a selfie together, and then she was looking at crying, and Kate's like, "All right, mom, I see you." She's like, "Look, I need this moment. Let me be your mom."
Exactly. Which she really hasn't been Kate's mom a lot. You know, they've always had that tension. So she really meant it.
Yeah. But Randall, you know, Deja has problems with the teacher. And so Randall goes looking for – I thought that was handled well. He goes and confronts her.
Yeah, he picked a fight with her.
Yeah.
He's just like, I'm not finished.
Yeah.
And I mean, he made the woman cry.
But he was right, though. Yeah. She took a very personal, deep secret that Deja had and posted it on the online for the whole school to see, and now they're making fun of her for it.
Yeah. And never told her, never asked her permission. Yeah,
exactly.
Just said, oh, I'm proud of her, so I'm putting this up here. And
right. And the teacher's like, I'm sorry, I didn't think of it that way. And then after she explained it, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. But she still shouldn't have done it. And then
like Randall's like, I'm sorry I made you cry. She goes, oh, it doesn't take much.
I want to know who that actress was because she seemed familiar as well.
Yeah. Okay. I'll try to look it up.
But then, of course, like, oh, Deja should skip 8th grade because you only had her stay back to get acclimated. Mm-hmm. And she's doing great, and she definitely doesn't need to be in 8th grade. She should be, like, with her age group.
She's super smart.
Deja doesn't want to do that because she likes her routine of getting up in the morning and everything. That would change the routine.
And having either Randall or Beth there to pick them up from school.
Right. And that's an important fact later because, you know, they're looking at all their busy schedules and everything going on, and with Beth teaching dance class now and Randall being elected and on and on and on, you know, Randall comes to the conclusion of, I thought he was going to say, I shouldn't accept this political
position. That should have been the smart thing.
You know, instead he goes, you know, Beth, I know that you've been there for me to let me do what I want to do and da 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 blah blah blah. But do we really want to hire someone to be here to for the kids to miss the moments and to you know not be us and this and that? So maybe we should put a pin in this whole dance teacher thing. And basically, like, I took that as him being like, oh, what you want to do is not as important as I want to do.
Yeah.
And that's what you exactly want to do can just wait.
Yeah.
And her response of like, oh, so you can continue to live your dreams and I have to continue to put mine on hold.
And then it gets cut off because that's when mom calls and says, Kate's in the hospital. Right. And Randall's like, it's too soon.
Yeah.
And then it cuts. So once again, she has to put her frustration on hold because Randall has to go do the family thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, we had just gotten that episode before with, you know, that was all Beth centric. And she was talking about what an amazing man he is and how she found love and she was so happy after everything that her mom put her through. And
she discovered what she wanted to do, which was be a dance teacher.
And now, you know, Randall essentially, like you said, he was just like, yeah, let's put a pin in it.
Yeah.
You know, that was his compromise was you need to put your stuff on hold so that you can be around for the girls because I'm not going
to be able to be here.
And that's probably why in a lot of these flash forwards, it doesn't look like they're together.
Yeah, it really doesn't. So I did not watch The Blacklist or Superstore because I haven't had time.
I did not watch The Blacklist because it's on tonight.
Is it on Fridays?
Yep.
Okay, that's why I couldn't find it on there. All right.
Yep. Did you watch New Amsterdam, by the way?
I did.
Yeah. It was an okay
episode. Okay, yeah. The Pope was around, so of course, like the Catholic couple that's all religious, you know, gets the blessing of the Pope to get divorced.
Yeah.
Because that happens in real life. Fucking hospitals and Mary Sue. Anyways. Yep. let's talk about the greatest show on television right now.
I can't believe you didn't watch Superstore.
It was on last night, but it wasn't on Hulu. And then today, when I woke up, I didn't have much time. My option was to watch Superstore or The Orville.
Okay. You did make a good choice, and I will say this was kind of a weak episode of Superstore. I mean, they had some good, funny stuff, but none of the stories were really like,
The Orville.
Wait. Before you get into The Orville.
Oh, no. Sorry. You're the worst.
Thank you. I was just going to say, let's do the You're the Worst first, because You're the Worst was fucking great.
You're the Worst was amazing. It was a surprise bachelorette party.
On Sunday Funday.
Yes.
I actually linked an article here because I wanted to make sure to get all the nicknames right, because they had custom t-shirts made up. So they had Jimmy's face and Gretchen's face on the front of the shirt. Yeah. So the women had ones that said Bride's Hoes.
Yeah.
And the guys had shirts that said Groom's Bros. And then on the back, they each had a crank. So Vernon's shirt said Carrot Doc because he's redhead and he's a doctor. Lindsay's was Walking Hormone.
Yep.
Edgar's was PTS Dummy.
Yep.
Becca was Insect with Boobs.
Yep.
Yep. Paul was Alive Roger Ebert.
Basically.
Gretchen was Emotionally Stunted Ginger.
Yep.
And Jimmy was Pompous Albino Brit.
Yep.
So those were their official names, kind of like it was on a sports shirt.
Yes. You know? So they go on, they get this party bus to go do this list of things. What are you laughing about?
Oh, go with.
Okay. And it's lame as shit.
Oh, it is.
The party is the lamest. And so, like...
But don't worry, they have booze.
Yeah, they have booze. Homemade brew from Paul.
Strawberry lager.
Yeah.
Strawberry pale ale or
yeah,
lager.
Regardless.
Yeah,
they got shitty homebrew that Paul made. Which he has an allergic reaction to later.
Dude, I laughed so many times in this episode. I mean, I had to keep stopping it because I was laughing at some of the shit that happened in this.
You know, Becca makes it all about her and, you know, oh, I'm pregnant, da-da-da-da. And then it gets revealed that Paul's the dad. But then Paul, like, had sex with her, so they make all these cuckold jokes.
Dude, before that, Jimmy goes up front.
Yeah.
Because Paul's driving the van, and Jimmy goes up front, and he's like, he's just trying to check his phone or something. And Paul's like, boy, this ale's making me a little tipsy to the point where I might actually divulge a secret to you. And Jimmy's like, I don't want to know. And he goes, well, I got to tell somebody. And Jimmy's like, please, I don't care. Yeah. And he's like, look, I'm going to tell you, but if you tell anybody else, you owe me $1,000. And he's like, uh-huh, whatever. And he's like, he basically says that he had sex with Becca.
And then Jimmy grabs the microphone. And you hear ding. And you look at
it. Venmo, Jimmy Shrivebook sent you $1,000.
I like that. He goes, hold on, and deposit? All right.
Literally just sent him $1,000. And Paul looks up, he's like, oh!
And so then he announces, yeah. So then he tells everybody that Paul is the one that actually, that Paul, like, had sex with her. And so they make all these cuckold jokes to, what's his face? Vernon about it. And then finally Vernon goes up and he's like, Paul, I got to tell people I was there. They got to know what really happened. No, you can't. I got to, well, how much is it worth to you? And then you like, you see like, yeah.
He goes, are you on Venmo?
Yeah, yeah. And so then he pays Vernon to not say anything.
Yep.
And then Becca makes a big cuckold joke about it. And he finally, I was like, you hear, dang. And he looks down at you, man.
No.
And then he says, I was there. We all had sex at the same time. You know? It was a magical moment. I was going to kill myself. And then I decided not to. Because the sex was so good.
And we all came at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. They kept asking him what his favorite movie was, and they had things again.
Okay,
to make
nice.
Sure I had them. They had A Cuckwork Orange, A Hunt for the Red Cucktober, Uncle Cuck, The Mighty Cucks, The Joy Cuck Club, Cuckleberry Finn.
I like that one.
The Marx Brothers in Cuck Soup. I love Paul and Tompkins came up with that one. Good Night and Good Cuck. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Moon Cuck. The Cuckle Wears Prada, and I Heart Cuckabees.
Excuse me. Oh, yeah, that's the other thing. When they stopped to get real booze, Paul F. Tompkins was there, who has become nothing but an arrogant ass on this show.
Oh, yes.
He's horrid. But he was there, and so basically he forces... Edgar to let him on the bus.
Mm-hmm.
What are you guys doing? And it turns out by the end of it, we find out that like he forced Tompkins to be there because he kept going to HR and complaining about how he was treating of him. And this was like, all right, sign this document. You're not going to HR. Okay, it was nice working with you type of thing.
Yep.
But so that's why he's there on the bus now or whatever.
Yep.
And he tells, we're not going to go to this lame thing. We're going to Vegas. So they head off towards Vegas. But then Paul's blind and he takes a wrong turn.
Paul's
allegedly
blind because he accidentally got some of his beer splashed in his eyes and got a yeast infection in his eyes. He's like, it can happen.
So they end up like in the middle of nowhere because he can't drive and they're out of gas allegedly.
Yep.
And Paul F. Tompkins is going after Edgar. So Edgar goes after him. He pushes him off the bus and he lands on the ground and then all this stuff happens and Edgar pats him down, finds a gun and da 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 da. Prior to that, he rips on everybody. And then he does like a game show or what type thing with Jimmy and
Gretchen
about, oh, you know, what do you guys think about kids? And they're finding out that maybe they're not meant to be together. They have too many differences. One wants kids, one doesn't.
Gretchen
one
wants religion. Kids.
Yeah.
And that's really scary to think.
Yeah. And she's like, well, I don't know.
I never would have expected that.
Well, here's the thing. And this is, she makes up a good point. She's like, I don't know where I'm going to be in 5 years. Maybe I'm going to be sober.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I'm going to want kids.
And we've seen the flash forward.
Right. And that's the other thing. Jimmy's just like, wait, so these aren't values you hold. These are whims.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, because I want to change my mind. It's a whim. So that's a valid point by her. Mm-hmm. She's just changing her mind about things.
Yep.
It's not a whim. It's how she feels right now, and she may change her mind later. She doesn't know.
Right.
So it looks like they're heading down that path of not being together.
Yep.
And then they run out of gas and blah, blah, blah. Then they find a gun on Paul F. Tompkins. And then, like, they think Edgar's going to shoot him because he's got his PTSDs. So he gives Jimmy the gun. And then Paul, like, somehow, like, the dog's like, Vernon goes, give me a second. Vernon goes over to check on him. Paul comes, takes a knife. Cuts his throat.
Cuts his
blood is just pouring out of him, and Vernon dies. And he's like, "I thought he said he was going to take care of me. He's a doctor, you know." And he gets a dip on me. You're all going to be dead soon, anyways. What? Yeah. I mean, this is what I like to do. I mean, you really set it up for me. I'm going to kill all of you. Like, I told you he was crazy. And he goes after Edgar. Jimmy shoots him.
Yep.
And then he
shoots him like three times.
No, he shot him once.
I thought it was twice at least.
Oh, he shot him once in the back, and then
that's right, yeah.
And then he's like ends up dropping the gun, or he gives it to Gretchen, or something happens because he goes to check on him, and then he attacks him, and then Gretchen shoots him two more times.
That's right.
And then what are we doing? Jimmy's like, I don't know. We'll go to Mexico. We'll get out of here. Da da da. As long as we're together, it doesn't matter where we are.
Right.
Which is key.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course, it's all a big setup.
Yep.
By Edgar and everybody to give him the best bachelorette party ever.
Yep. Because, you know, it was all they got Paul F. Tompkins' help because he let them know that he had 8 years of stage fighting and he makes his own squibs.
Yeah. And it's funny because he goes, oh, when you guys started talking about that threesome you had, I almost lost character. So this episode was awesome. It was hilarious.
It was great. And I had almost forgotten, we got a flash forward in the very beginning of Edgar running away from something in a tuxedo.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah, he was just running through like some trees and bushes, like in a, not a hedge maze type of thing, but you know, a yard that has like hedges. And he was running and running and running from something or someone.
Oh, and then at the end, like Edgar basically says, Jimmy, your script is shit.
Yeah.
And he's like, I knew it was. And then he's like, you know, will you help me with it? Yes, but I'm going to be co-writer, not a, you know, advisor. And then he's like, all right. And then he's like, you know, Jimmy, we are friends. We shouldn't keep things from each other, blah, blah, blah. And then Edgar's like, Gretchen's been stealing my pills, my good pills. Well, you know, but she's a da-da-da. No. She's saving them up. So I think he's worried that she's going to kill herself.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But obviously she's alive because flash forward, she's alive.
And sober from the looks of it.
Yes.
So. One of the grossest lines in this was, I can't remember who it was. I think it was Vernon. Little baby growing in there. Gosh, can you believe it's not just cum anymore?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. It was like when I'm wrestling with Vince McMahon introduces Sean Shane as the product of my semen.
It's what it is, but still not really great. Yeah, that was a phenomenal episode.
It really was.
So now the Orville.
The Orville.
So shifting gears quite substantially.
Yes. I love the hell out of this show.
Jesus.
I know we say it every week. This week it hit me. Like, I know the Orville's on Fox, but it doesn't feel like a Fox show.
Nope.
And here's the thing. They always do that little thing before the credits. Mm-hmm. The little bumper, that little teaser, whatever it is. And it's weird because on The Rookie, it has nothing to do with the episode you're going to see. And this sets up the episode.
Right.
And it dawns on me, like, this is classic syndicated television.
Mm-hmm.
This really is. If you think about, like, and, you know, Seth MacFarlane, obviously, he knows about television. He's watched it forever. And, like, there's so much social commentary that goes on in this show, in these episodes and everything. It doesn't surprise me that the format of it is very similar to, like, classic syndicated television shows
that he grew up on, that he references all the time in his other
works. Exactly, yeah. Like, I was thinking about it. It's like, this doesn't feel like a network show.
Nope.
Like, which I know it sounds weird to say that, but it just doesn't. It feels like this is a syndicated show that airs on Fox. Which to me, because I don't watch it when it's on Fox, I don't even get that feeling that it's on Fox. Well, like I noticed this week's episode was 49 minutes. So, I mean, like they're cutting commercials out of it. Because yeah. most TV, like that's five more, that's 5 minutes longer than most average hour long shows.
When I watch it on my DVR, it always is prefaced by tonight's Orville is brought to you with limited commercial interruption by such and such.
Okay. So, but we, I don't know. This show is just so great.
Yes, it is.
It really is. And this episode is called Blood of the Patriots. And basically, the Orville is sent to meet up with the Krill to engage in peace talks.
Because we're.
Based on what happened in the last episode.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. And they're not going to start the peace talks. They're going to start a process.
Yes.
That the Krill, it's a ceremony that the Krill have that right. leads to peace talks.
Yes. So this is a ceremonial. Yeah, it's a ceremony. Basically, they've already been in a ceasefire now for a few months. And now they're going to have these peace talks. So this is the ceremony that kicks off the peace talks. And the Orville has been chosen to do it because of their interactions with the Krill that they've had in the past.
And Mercer at first is like,
I'm not qualified for this.
There's no way. You have diplomats. Ted Danson once again reprising his role as an admiral. And yeah, Mercer's like, no, I shouldn't be doing this. And he's like, look, you are literally the only ones who have had any kind of extended interaction with the Krill between the mission that you and Malloy took and then that Krill woman that you had a relationship with who invaded your ship. He's like, we're not asking you to broker peace. We're just asking you to start the process. Ceremony,
yeah. And then, of course, there's a
which
hiccup.
Is good. Again, you know, I would have been very disappointed if they had said, oh, we're going to go and broker the peace. No,
that's not his job.
Exactly.
Which is another reason why this show is so good.
Yes.
Because it's just great television. It really, like I was watching, I was like, I think Kate would like this because it's not your typical sci-fi show. It's just a really good show that happens to be on a spaceship in space, which I love.
Yep.
So, of course, there's a hiccup. As they're meeting up with the Krill, there's a shuttlecraft that's taking off, and they're firing on – the Krill is firing on it, and it crashes in there into the Orville's landing zone.
Well,
whatever.
It hails them and says and there's a voice on there that doesn't sound Krill, and it says, Orville, you've got to help me. They're trying to kill me. And so Mercer's like, hey, open up the
shuttle bay and put up the shields and let's see what's going on. And basically the Krill accuse this guy of killing 1,200 Krills and destroying four ships with the blah, blah, blah.
During the ceasefire.
During the ceasefire. Yeah, that he's a prisoner who escaped and during the ceasefire he did this, so he needs to come stand trial and da, da, da. And, of course, they find out that this guy is a human. He is a lieutenant in the Union and he's been in missing for 20 years.
Yep. And Malloy knows him. They were best friends. They have a history together.
He saved Malloy's life, and him saving Malloy and others' lives is actually what got him captured.
Yep.
And his wife was killed, and there's a girl there that's...
His daughter.
His daughter. And she hasn't spoken in 12 years. And
because...
And the Krill did horrible things to her and this and that. And
she's got a little Nell kind of thing going on there.
Yes, exactly. And... So, of course, there's suspicion towards him.
Right. Well, the Krill have flat out said, you're threatening peace talks because this guy, you know, broke the ceasefire and you're harboring him.
And this guy's like, we shouldn't be making peace with the Krill.
Right.
And, you know, Malloy makes a good point. He's like, look, you know, earlier on in the episode, then later on in the episode, he makes a good point of like, yeah, you're right. We've killed a lot of their people. They've killed a lot of our people. Shouldn't we stop the killing?
Yeah, we've got a chance now to put an end to all of it.
Yes. And the big thing is they can't figure out how, how he's been, there's no weapons on the ship. There's no weapons on the shuttle. There's no, the warp core, whatever it is the quantum core, whatever they call it, is dried up. How could he have done this? He has no weapons on him. She has no weapons on her. Yada, yada, yada.
Even as he starts looking suspicious, they're like, he took some storage containers. Well, did he take anything from the quantum matter drive? No, we've checked like twice. He didn't take any
quantum
material.
The storage containers, is to hold the quantum material and this and that. So it seems very odd.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Oren's daughter is really just... Yeah.
And, of course, the whole time Malloy is like, I know this guy. I owe him my life.
Yes.
He's a good guy. He wouldn't do this. He couldn't do this.
And basically, Oren says to Malloy, like, look, you owe me. I saved your life. Let's steal a shuttlecraft together, and we can go stop this peace talks from happening.
Yep.
Well, how are you going to do it? And he won't tell him. And so Malloy because the captain tries to talk to Malloy about it, and he basically is like, you're jealous of our friendship. And the captain's like, no, what are we in sixth grade now? Apparently, you know, there's some of the humor we get in the episode. Like the when the Krill try to board the ship and the captain's making his security officer stall them. And so she's like, what's your ship number? What's your mother's maiden name? I need a urine sample, you know, like.
And to their credit, like they put up with all of it, even when she's like, I need a urine sample from all of you. And they're like, where are we supposed to do that? And she goes, you could go behind those crates over there. And they're like, okay.
Yeah.
And they do.
Right. But basically we find out that Oren's daughter, Lena, is not her. She's a species that we've never met. And her blood, when exposed to
a nitrogen-rich atmosphere,
is explosive.
Yep. And apparently, years and years back, they fought against the humans, and there was a problem. So that
I didn't think they fought them. I thought they met each other. They found out this is what happens because of their blood.
That's what it was. Yeah.
And so they basically made a deal that this race will stay off nitrogen-rich planets.
Yep.
Because there's something in their atmosphere that nullifies what's in their blood, but everywhere else, it's...
Yeah, as soon as their blood touches nitrogen. And the doctor recognizes it right off when the security chief goes in and knocks the girl down and she starts bleeding a little orange.
Yeah, well, what it is, she sees her arms full of, like, needle puncture marks, and she's like, oh, we need to have you checked out by the doctor. And then that's finally she breaks her silence, and she can talk, and she puts a knife to her neck.
Tell her to belay that order.
Yeah, it's like, have you ever met Alyssa Slayton? No. Oh, now you have. Frozer.
But the doctor's like, you need to get back away from her as quickly as possible. Tells him to put a force field around
it. High level. Divert all power to this force field and drain all the nitrogen from the room.
Yep. And then it explains who they are, and that's what he's been doing.
Which, they don't explain what they're doing with her on the ship. Like, what are they doing?
What do you mean?
Well, they never tell us what they did with her.
Oh.
Like, Oren, okay, so Malloy, they set up a ploy where Malloy gets Oren on the shuttle, and they're going to try to figure out, okay, determine how he was doing it.
Right.
And then they discover that he was using those canisters to bring her blood together, and then he was using the torpedo things to launch the torpedoes at the ships and hit the ships, and that's how he was destroying them. But there's no torpedo launcher on their shuttle, so he's essentially going to go kamikaze into them to kill the Krill, because... To him, his life is ending. His own life is worth destroying the Krill and stopping these peace accords because he hates them that badly.
Right.
And she agreed to pretend to be his daughter because she hates him that badly for her own reasons, and we never know. We don't know what they are.
Yep.
So ultimately, at the end, Malloy they get into a fight on the shuttle. Malloy disables the shuttle and then puts on the suit and is like, "We gotta go," because he activates the bomb. And he's like, no, I'm not going anywhere.
Yep.
And so Malloy leaves the ship, and it explodes, and then he eventually gets rescued. And then we find out what happened, and then we see the peace accord ceremony, you know, the start of it. We don't know what happens to her.
Right.
To Lena.
I would assume she's taken into custody, because she's responsible as well.
Right.
You're right, though, because we don't know. The Krill actually said,
"We
don't want her, we only want him."
Yes.
So they probably don't tell the Krill, oh, by the way, it was her blood that he was using.
Correct,
Because I can't imagine that would do anybody any good.
No, it wouldn't.
But I would assume she's taken into custody, and very carefully, obviously.
I do like how Ed after goes and tells Malloy, like, look, I guess I was a little jealous, because, like, you are my friend, because the fact is, every day I sit in that ship, that seat, and I think, do I deserve this? Am I qualified for this? Do I deserve to do this? Am I doing the right thing? And I have no one I can tell that to, because then they would lose faith in me.
Yeah. He's like, you're the only one.
Yeah.
Because of our friendship. He goes, I could talk to Kelly about it, but...
Things have been weird lately.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting.
And even though most of the episode was predictable, like, you knew when the guy came on that he had been doing this.
Yes.
You know, you knew that there was some way they'd figure out some mystery.
And he acted suspicious enough.
Yep. And it's Mackenzie Astin, you know, the biggest guest star is always the bad guy.
Yep.
So you knew that stuff was coming, but it still was super enjoyable watching them get there.
Yes.
I really enjoyed the episode. I really thought that it was well done. And again, I saw an article this week that actually talked about that, saying that, you know, a lot of hardcore Trekkies and such, when you say the Orville, they're like, oh, pff, garbage, blah, blah, blah. But now with this season, those people have started coming around.
Yeah.
And people are actually starting to really look at this show as, holy crap, this isn't just a dick and fart joke.
No, and that's what we thought it was going to be.
That was
we
the opening.
Yeah.
The opening was them giving an award to Yoffit
yeah.
for his bravery during the
yes.
the attack.
That's the opening, yes.
And I also like, too, that not only did we continue where that left off, but when Ed was talking to the Admiral later, and the Admiral was like, we're considering actually turning this guy over because, you know what, that's one life.
Yes.
He said, we can't face this new enemy alone. We
right.
need to broker peace with these people because yep. it's just going to be too much for us. Because they know that even though the Kylons retreated, they're going to come back.
They're going to regroup, yeah.
And probably better than before. So,
right.
again, it was nice that we're getting continuity. We're getting a continuation to this escalating right. war.
But when this show first came on, we thought it was going to be dick and fart jokes. We thought it was going to be over-the-top comedy. We thought it was going to be kind of like a Star Trek spoof slash knockoff or whatever. And it's not.
No.
It's been wonderful television.
It really has.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that it's getting that recognition from other people as well.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look on IMDb, I just noticed this. this episode right here, Blood of Patriots, is an 8.4.
Yeah.
Identity Part 1, 9.4. Identity Part 2, 9.3.
Yeah.
So... yeah.
If you look at season two right now is 100% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Which we can't always trust Rotten Tomatoes.
No, you can't, but.
Got all that fucking review bombing shit going on right now. But anyway, yeah, it's a really good show. And honestly, if you're not watching this, you're missing out.
Identity, that two-part episode was tremendous.
Oh, my God.
So, I don't know, I just...
that space battle.
That space battle was crazy good. I like how, you know, Jerry even said, you know, remind him of, like, you know, Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, unlike some of the other cheesiness and CGI we've seen or whatever. But, right. yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't know. Show's wonderful. I love it. I can't sing enough praises about it.
Nope.
Umbrella Academy.
Yeah, because that's all the other shows that I've got this week.
Do we want to talk about Umbrella right now? Do we want to do any news?
Let's close out with Umbrella. Because okay. it was a 10-episode series that we, you know, got the finality of, so.
Yeah.
Did you watch any movies?
I mean, yes, but nothing new.
Mm. I watched one, but I don't really want to talk about it.
What's the title, at least?
Hot Rod.
Oh, that one with Andy Samberg
from yep.
years ago?
Yep.
Oh,
some comedian that I follow on, and I can't remember if it was Mike Lawrence or it was somebody... And they were talking about how they went back and rewatched it, and they really loved the early work of these guys and how good it was. And I looked at the cast, and I mean, they've got Ian McShane, Sissy Spacek, Fred Armisen. You know, there was some really good talent in this.
You've never watched it before?
No, I'd never. I'd seen bits and pieces of it here. Bill Hader, Danny McBride.
Yep.
So I watched it, and it wasn't terrible, but it just really wasn't that good. It was the first movie that The Lonely Island did together. And...
I remember watching the first time being like, this is dumb.
Yeah, it was not that great. It was very cheesy in a number of places. I liked watching Ian McShane kick the shit out of him, though.
Nice.
That was fun. But yeah, I can't really recommend it.
I watched, I don't watch any movies either, or any movie, well, anything new. there's some news.
Yeah.
I don't have any trailers. That's what I was trying to go with. There we go.
I forgot, I do have one trailer.
What?
Good Omens. Coming on Amazon. It's based on Terry Pratchett's novel uh-huh. about an angel and a devil who are friends. The devil, it's not Satan, but it's a demon.
That's the David Tennant.
David Tennant.
Yes, and Benedict Cumberbatch.
Well, Benedict Cumberbatch is the voice of Satan.
Voice of Satan, but David Tennant, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. The apocalypse is coming, and they've lost the Antichrist. So
it's David Tennant.
Angel and the demon have to team up together to find the Antichrist.
How was the trailer?
It's phenomenal. I'll show you after this.
When does it start?
Soon.
Okay.
But it's an Amazon Prime. Oh, yeah, you have Amazon
Prime. I have Amazon Prime now. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll show you that one afterwards.
You got any news?
Yep.
What you got?
Sherlock Holmes 3 is still on track, but now it's been pushed back to come out Christmas of 2021 instead of 2020.
Jesus.
This is the one with Jude Law and Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be 2020. Now it's going to be 2021.
I mean, I love the movies, but come on now. That's... like, basically 2 years away.
Yeah. Superstore was renewed for season 5.
Oh, yeah, I saw that, yeah.
Excited about that. Matt Bomer.
Yeah.
He's going to be one of the recurring characters in season 3 of The Sinner.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they gave some of the rundown of the show. Apparently, it's another small town kind of thing, and something happens. Matt Bomer is one of the concerned parents, and Bill Pullman will be back.
I was about to ask if he's going to be back.
Yeah.
So the director of The Sandlot, David Mickey Evans, states that there's going to be a TV show about The Sandlot. Mm-hmm. It's going to take place in 1984, 33 years after the original series. The kids now have their own the original movies. I mean, the original movie,
but it takes place in 1984.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Because the original movie came out after that, but then it took place. Yeah. Okay.
Anyways, so the kids now have their own kids, and the original cast from the movie is going to be back playing themselves as parents.
Really?
Those kids now play on The Sandlot, if you will.
Okay.
And apparently it was sold to an online streaming service. We wouldn't say which. He was doing a interview for some other like movie or film thing he was working on. And this came up.
Okay.
So James Gunn's Suicide Squad movie. If you're thinking about this.
Yes.
Okay. So it's not going to be a sequel. It's going to be a revamp.
Yep.
And Margot Robbie's going to be returning as Harley Quinn. And Idris Elba's going to be playing Deadshot, replacing Will Smith.
Mm-hmm. Which is terrible. If you're going to lose a character, just lose the character. Right. Don't bring in a different actor to play that character.
Well, Brody. Iron Man.
True.
Ratcatcher is returning, but it's going to be played by a woman now. So they're changing the gender of the character. And then the other members of the squad are going to be King Shark.
Which there's a rumor Dave Bautista might be playing him.
Yes, because of David Teese's huge fan of James Gunn, yeah. Polka Dot Man and the Peacemaker are the other characters that are going to be part of the squad.
And because it's Gunn, I can see that. He's going to go for the weirdos, the obscure ones. Polka Dot, I mean, come on.
Right. That's my news.
I got one more.
Yep.
I just got to make sure that I've got the correct stuff here. Okay, so Josh Radnor has just signed on for a new show.
Okay.
Mike was yawning.
So I was yawning.
He's going to be starring in Amazon's new TV series called The Hunt.
Okay.
It's going to be from Jordan Peele. Yeah, I knew that would get your attention. The drama series follows a band of diverse Nazi hunters living in 1977 New York City.
I talked about this a few weeks ago. They didn't have a cast, though. Okay. Yep.
The hunters, as they're known, have discovered that hundreds of high-ranking Nazi officials are living among us and conspiring to create a Fourth Reich in the U.S. The cast also includes Al Pacino, Logan Lerman, and Jerrica Hinton.
Yes. Okay. I just didn't remember the title, but yes, I remember reading about that. I think I brought it up a few weeks ago.
I think so. It sounded familiar.
Yeah.
Yeah. On The Hunt, Radnor will be playing Looney Flash, a movie star who's secretly a member of Myers' organization. Pacino is Myers running the organization. I'm excited for that.
Yeah,
well, for a number of different reasons.
Jordan Peele.
Yeah.
Period.
Nazi hunters in 1977.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're talking like Goodfellas kind of stuff, but yeah. Much cooler. So that's all I got for news.
Okay, I guess we're on to the Umbrella Academy.
Yep.
So, did you like this show?
Yeah. In fact, I liked it so much that I have restarted the show.
Really?
And I have been listening off and on all week to the Spotify playlist put out by Netflix of the soundtrack.
Oh, the soundtrack's probably amazing.
Including the, you know, updated versions of Hazy Shade of Winter and, I can't even think of it. I've been listening to it all week. Bay City Rollers, you know, Saturday Night, Istanbul. There's just some phenomenal songs on
Istanbul,
there.
Istanbul, not Constantinople.
So good. I really enjoyed this show the more I watched it. And again, for me, there was a turning point.
Yeah.
And that was episode 6.
Okay.
Just like with Haunting of Hill House.
Yeah.
And what about yourself? Did you like it?
I did. I enjoyed it. I didn't sit down and burn through it all at once. I watched a few episodes here and there. But I mean, I did watch it all in timely fashion type of thing.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. I had a groan moment for me.
Okay.
And I don't know if it was episode 6 or actually episode 7, to be honest. But it's basically when we... I think it was actually episode 7. When we learn that Vanya has powers, that's cool. But then when we see, like, she can't control them, and then what her powers do... I think that was episode 7 when the guys are beating up on Leonard.
Yeah.
I went, oh, she causes the apocalypse.
Ooh. Yep.
It's just kind of it wasn't like that.
Oh, see, I love that.
See, no, because it was like, oh, it's too fucking obvious.
But that's what it had to be. This wasn't, like, remember, this is based on a comic book, but it was not, there haven't been a lot of major story arcs to it.
See, here's the thing, like, if they would have made it less obvious and had been, like, a surprise reveal, like, something happens and she, like, you know what I mean? I don't know if they could have told the story that way, but I'm just saying, like...
Well, it was what, like the 7th episode out of 10?
Yeah.
So it's not like they revealed it in the second episode.
And then the next 3 episodes, they basically, like...
Build her up.
Build her up to tear her down type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's just, I don't know, it was just so telegraphed, I think is what it was. I don't know.
But it kind of had... That's what I'm thinking is, you know, it was 10 episodes.
Yeah.
They weren't going to, like, have the mystery of the apocalypse go on throughout 5 seasons.
Right.
You know, they wanted it done at the end of this season in case they got canceled.
Yeah.
Plus, they were loosely following the comics.
Yeah.
But they kind of had to reveal how it was going to happen. And I'd rather have that and build up towards it because you know she caused it, but you don't know how. Like, what does the eyeball have to do with things? What about this? What about... So...
I think she just went... She turned evil, if you will. She just jumped into the pool with both feet.
She did, but, again, I liked that part because I liked the fact that you got to see the backstory. Like, she started remembering things, and she remembered that she always had those powers.
Right.
And that not only did he abuse her, but then he locked her in that room. And when that didn't work, he sent her sister down to basically say to her, hey, I heard a rumor. You think you're ordinary.
Yeah.
And locked her powers away that way. So
right.
She had been manipulated. Her family knew. Her dad knew.
Well, her Pogo sister and knew. Dad knew. Pogo knew.
Well, she assumed that everybody knew because they'd always treated her like that. So she assumed that they were all in on it. And,
yeah.
I mean, it wasn't. It was just her sister and Pogo and dad.
Yeah, I know we got that. I don't know.
So she was dealing with the fact that she had powers.
Right.
That her world had been turned upside down. She was also just coming back from the tragedy of losing her father.
Right.
Who, because of her ordinariness, she always tried to be closer to, even though he kind of pushed her away. And then...
I guess I didn't think of the scope that by her saying, I heard a rumor that you were ordinary... didn't just affect her powers, it affected every aspect of her life.
Yeah.
That's why she is always the third chair on violin, because she's just ordinary.
Yep.
So she's just accepted that there's nothing special in any way, shape, or form about her in anything she does.
And that means that about 20 years of her life, she was cursed this way because of her sister's meddling with her at her father's request.
Yeah.
I'd probably be a little pissed too, you know? I don't know if I'd go full supervillain. But
that was the thing. She legit went full supervillain.
Yep.
You know?
Well, she felt like all this time she... Again, I'm not making excuses for her. But, you know, she felt that she could have been there with her brothers and sisters. That they unilaterally made a choice to keep her out of this and to lock away her powers because... And to lock away her, essentially, like you said.
Yeah.
You know, because they didn't trust her. They didn't think that she could be handled. So... Yeah, full-on supervillain may have been a bit of a stretch, but not that far of a stretch, because she's basically been repressed all this time.
Fair enough.
And we saw that when she was a kid, she was unstable to begin with. Like, when he was trying to train her, she was snarky. She killed women.
Several of her nannies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had to finally build the robot so that she couldn't kill her.
Yeah, no, that's actually very true. She killed several of the nannies.
Yeah. Like, flat out, like, they tried to make her eat her oatmeal, and she just, like, threw them across the room and threw them out windows and snapped necks. And... Dude, he had to cover up a lot of fucking straight-up murders.
He did.
So we've kind of jumped in at the end.
Yeah, we did. Which, in that way, I guess, you know, she definitely Okay.
So the basis of this story, as they explain right when it opens up,
yes,
is that on this certain day in such and such a time, such and such a place, around the world, a bunch of women gave birth.
Right.
And none of them were pregnant the moment before. They just right. all of a sudden went into labor and had babies.
Right.
And, you know,
1989, 43 women simultaneously okay. gave birth.
And Sir Reginald Hargreaves, a.k.a. the Monocle, their yep. dad, went around and bought seven of them.
Well, he bought what he could, which yep. he ended up with seven.
Yep. Which I really want to know what happened to some of the other ones.
Well, that's the other thing, too. It's like, well, do the others have powers?
Because how many did he say it was? Like
43. So that means there's 36 others out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So he basically got seven of them, snatched them right up, and because he knew that they had powers, and he knew that he could train them, and we find out later on, he knew that the apocalypse was coming.
Yeah.
Because he could see the future, and he knew that the apocalypse was coming, and he knew that he had to do something to save the world.
So at the beginning when he dies, all the siblings are scattered.
Yep.
I don't have all the number.
I've got all their names.
Okay.
So you've got Luther.
Yeah.
Who's number one.
He's living on the moon.
Space boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've taken a lot of, I read up on this, they've taken a lot of creative liberties from the comics.
Yeah.
They had to change some things. In the comics, he got badly injured and his dad took his head off and put it on the body of a Martian gorilla, which is why he looked like that. In this case, in the TV series, he just did an experimental procedure on
yeah.
him and basically turned his body to look like a gorilla slash a werewolf.
Okay.
So you've got him. He's up on the moon for 4 years.
So who's number two?
Number two is Diego, the Kraken. And in the comics, the Kraken could hold his breath indefinitely.
Yeah.
So he was their underwater assassin. He swam into places and could go places the other ones couldn't. In this one, they didn't have the budget for water.
So he throws knives.
So he throws knives and can curve them like in Wanted.
But that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Number three?
Number three is Allison, the Rumor. Her power is pretty damn cool.
Yeah.
Basically, she lies and alters reality. So she says, I heard a rumor you shot your friend in the knee.
Yeah.
And the guy goes, oh, and he does.
So but where they are currently when we first meet them is Diego has got a costume on and he's fighting crime.
Yep.
Because as a kid, they all fought crime, if you will.
Yes. They were the as Umbrella Academy.
Yes. And so now Diego, he's still fighting crime.
Yep.
He's friends with one of the local detectives. And she's basically like, you need to stop doing this.
Yeah.
But at the same time.
I forget. Did she say that he flunked out of the academy or he yeah. was fired from being a cop? It was one or the other.
Yeah. It didn't work out for him.
Yeah.
And then Allison, she's a famous actress,
yep.
and this and that, but she has a kid that she lost custody of because, and this is where it doesn't make any fucking sense. Kid's being a shit turd, and she's just like, I heard a rumor you were tired.
Yep.
And he's like, oh, I'm going to go to sleep. And her husband's like, how dare you?
Yep.
How dare you use the powers that I knew you had to make our child mind? I think every parent on the planet would love to have that ability.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But most of them would say that it's manipulation. You know, you're mind controlling someone.
Right.
You're essentially. So I get where he was pissed at the same time. But yeah, every parent on the planet yeah. would absolutely jump for a power.
So
like
she's
that.
Lost custody of her kid. So yep. this whole time she's. She's dealing with that in the background with talking to them on the phone and not seeing her daughter and
yep.
arguing with him and blah, blah, blah. Number four?
Number four is Klaus. Very flamboyant character.
Yeah.
Klaus has the ability to speak with the dead. He was called the Seance.
Yes.
And he could speak with the dead. In the comics, he could also, like, levitate.
Yep.
And he had some mild telekinesis, but only when his shoes were off.
Yep.
He had to be barefoot. It's kind of weird.
Well, in this, when we find him, he's just getting out of rehab.
Yep.
Because he is a tremendous drug addict, and it's because of his ability to see the dead. Because it's almost like he doesn't have control over it.
Yep.
Because his dad used to flock him into the mausoleums, and the spirits of all these people would come out and not haunt him, but like they're communicating with him. But he was a scared little boy.
Yep.
And so
he was speaking to ghosts that nobody else could see.
Exactly. And so to deal with this, he became a severe drug addict, which suppresses it.
Yep.
And that's where we're at here.
Yep.
Number five.
Number five is number five.
Yep.
The boy. He can jump through space and time. And basically, he originally could only teleport. And
right.
he wanted to
Time travel.
He said, if I could go through space, why can't I go through time? And his dad was like, well, we have to take this slowly. And he's like, fuck you. And he time traveled.
And he time traveled into the future, into this apocalyptic world where he found all his siblings dead.
Yep.
And the glass eyeball.
Yep.
And no idea knowing what caused it. And then he lived there for 45 years, whatever it was, until this woman found him.
Yep.
Works for this agency.
Yep.
Do we know a lot about the agency?
We know that they are dedicated to maintaining the timeline and keeping historical events the way that they were supposed to happen.
Right. And so...
And they have a very weird way of communicating with pneumatic tubes.
That just appear out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere and in random things like soda machines and lamps and...
The wall.
Yep.
Bowling alleys. The ball return. And so basically she hires Five to be an agent.
Yep.
To go and work for them.
The other thing is he's called the boy because even though he's lived in the future for this many years, he doesn't age.
Yeah.
When he went backwards, it locked his age in there. So yes. He looks like a 13-year-old boy, but he's like 60 years old or something.
Right, yeah.
He's older than everybody else.
And so he works for this company. And basically, you're right. Like, they have people that are assigned to making sure that things go the way they're supposed to go.
Yep.
As far as like, oh, okay,
they're called the commission.
The commission, yeah. So basically, they have agents that are out there through time. And they'll get an assignment. And they have briefcases that they carry, which teleport them through time.
Yep.
And they'll get an assignment that basically says, like, all right, go to 1860s, whatever, and protect John Wilkes Booth because he's going to kill the president. We got to make sure no one stops him.
Yep.
And that's their job.
Yep.
Or go kill these people because they stopped this person from killing the president.
Yep.
Or whatever it is. And that's where this kid works for. And then he...
As an assassin.
And I guess he's, like, supposed to be the man on the grassy knoll during the Kennedy assassination. Yeah. And instead, he kind of does the math and he figures out how to time travel.
Yep.
And then he time travels to where we see him in episode one, kind of coming out of the vortex where he's traveling back, even though his family hasn't seen him in 17 years or whatever it is.
Yep. And he looks the same as he did.
Yes. And yep. We learn about all this stuff with him and the people hunting him and everything over the next several episodes.
Beautifully.
Yes. But we're kind of surmising it.
He has a girlfriend who is a mannequin.
Yes, it's almost kind of like in Castaway, how Tom Hanks had Wilson.
Yep.
When he went to this apocalypse of the future, he found a mannequin that was kind of still looked like a torso up, apparently.
Yep.
And that became his friend. And so when he gets back to this time frame, he goes to that store and takes the mannequin.
Yep. And keeps her with him until he manages to stop the apocalypse.
Yep. Number 6.
Number 6 was known as the Horror. He was Ben, and he had an ability that nobody quite understood. He basically had demonic tentacles that would come out of his chest area.
Yeah.
And demons inside of him. And he's dead.
We don't know why he's dead.
Right.
He died as a teenager, it looks like, or maybe a 20-year-old or something.
No. It was young.
His character didn't look that young on the show.
No. He had aged, but like the statue in the courtyard was him... As, 10, 11-year-old? So I'm not sure if...
Well, no, if the
where
kid...
Where he died. They never really talk about it. And they never talk about it in the comics either. He's just dead when they're adults.
And three?
Three can see him. No, four.
Four.
Klaus.
Klaus can see him.
Yep.
And, of course, the siblings don't believe that he can see him.
Right.
And that's another reason why he does the drugs.
Yep. But... That's the thing, too, is, like, in the beginning, he doesn't see him very often. It's glimpses here and there. And then towards the end, like, as he's getting more sober, he sees him more often.
Yes.
And Ben actually, like, starts guiding him and saying,
and
you
talking
know, you
to
need
him
to do this.
Yeah. And then at one point, Ben takes a swing at him and actually punches him. Yeah.
He goes, you ghosted me.
Yeah. That comes into play later on.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
And then number 7 is Vanya. Who we believe has no powers at all.
Yep.
And they're here because their dad's dead. And Vanya wrote a book a few years back that just basically told all the secrets and a big tell-all book.
Kind of lambasted the whole academy and her brothers and sister. And and they don't like her much for it.
Nope. Not at all.
They're pretty mad. But she felt like it was the only thing she had going for her.
Which is funny because they show the progression of her through over a period of time where it first comes out she's hugely popular down to when she's doing a reading for two people and then now her book's on the sale rack.
Yeah.
And it seemed to happen pretty quick. So again, she's ordinary.
Yep. Exactly.
There's a couple other characters that we get a lot in here. And these are the two of the people from the commission.
Cha-Cha and Hazel.
Cha-Cha and Hazel, yeah. And basically, they're assassins that work together, and they're there to stop Five.
Yep.
And they don't succeed very well.
No. But those two kick some motherfucking ass when they do.
They really do.
Like, they stand toe-to-toe with some of the best. And, I mean, Hazel goes fist-to-fist with Luther later on.
Yeah.
And actually gets the drop on him a number of times. Luther's a big boy.
I did not recognize
Cha-Cha
as Mary J. Blige.
I didn't either at first.
And I also didn't find out until I researched that Hazel, remember Mindhunter?
Yep.
Hazel played the serial killer that they go interview.
Oh, look at that.
Ed Kemper.
Huh. That's kind of cool.
The actor played,
The handler of the commission was Kate Walsh, who's been in a number of things. She had a show recently that got canceled where she was a judge, but a bad judge. I think mm-hmm. that might have been the name of the show, Bad Judge. But basically, they're trying to solve the mystery of how their father died. Because there was no foul play, there was no breaking and entering. But he's dead. He shouldn't be dead.
It's called Bad Judge. Okay. It lasted 13 episodes.
He shouldn't be dead, and he's dead. And they're trying to solve the mystery of this. They've all come back together. I mean, the first episode is called We Only See Each Other at Funerals and Weddings.
Yep.
And so they come back together reluctantly, and Mike got to see his favorite scene over and over again of the...
I'm watching it the first time, and I was right after we'd recorded... Last week or the week before, and I went to go watch an episode, and I dozed off at the first episode. And I woke up to everyone doing a dance break to I Think We're Alone Now. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? So then I rewind it back to where I'd fallen asleep, and I start watching again. And then again, I fall asleep again. And I wake up during the I Think We're Alone Now dance break, and I'm like, I just got to go to bed. And then finally, I watched the episode, and I was like, oh, now it makes sense.
Yeah.
It was like... Why are they dancing? This doesn't make any sense.
They did so many different things in this show that they did well that I really enjoy. A lot of the fight scenes had kick-ass music going along with them. You know, like you were talking about Istanbul when they're in the coffee shop and number Five is getting surrounded by the agents. And it's just like, okay, that kid is a phenomenal actor.
Yes.
Yeah. The fact that he's that age... And he was playing like a 60-year-old man.
We didn't talk about the passage.
Oh, we didn't talk about the passage.
We'll just save it for next week.
Okay, we'll save that for next week.
It was the kid actor thing that made me go, hey,
yep. We'll save that for next week. Because next week is double episode.
Well, right? This Monday we have the double episode season finale.
Good.
So, yeah.
We'll do a big passage thing next.
Yeah.
So anyway, so we've got that scene where he's, you know, a 13-year-old kid getting jumped by agents and using his time travel powers and teleport powers to just fuck with them bad and save his girlfriend in the process.
Yes.
All to Istanbul, but they might be giants. You had the bowling alley one, you know, Bay City Rollers Saturday night, and you've got them.
Gosh, that was crazy good.
Luther's chucking bowling balls at these guys, and Klaus throws a birthday cake.
Yeah.
Because that kid, she's like, oh, can you come over? Wouldn't you like to play with some kids your own age?
Yeah.
No.
No. Yeah.
And then they just ruin his birthday party.
Deservedly so.
Yeah. They did so many great battles like that. In the mansion, when you've got Hazel and Cha-Cha, and you've got Klaus walking around in the towel.
Yes.
And the towel on his head, and he's like dancing from room to room, and just missing them every time.
Yeah.
It was really well done. I really liked a lot of the cinematography in this. Like I said, the turning point for me, okay, as they're learning about their father and learning about what happened, and they've got Mom the robot, and they're trying to figure out, like, who set up who and what's going on. It's a little bit slow in the beginning. But then,
it is, because Luther's investigating, because he's like, Dad's monocle's gone.
Yeah.
There's no way, like, someone had to have killed him. There's no way this was, natural causes.
Right.
And yada, yada. And then...
And when Five appears, he goes to Vanya and tells her, he's like, of all the kids, you're the only one that could understand, but the world's going to end in 8 days.
Yeah.
And she's like, you're crazy. You've been time traveling too much. Your mind's been corrupted. Sorry. So it's not like they all know this. They're not all trying to solve this mystery because he's kind of keeping it close to the chest at this point because Vanya doesn't believe him. Well, who else will believe him?
Right.
And the turning point for me, though, was episode 6, which was called The Day That Never Was.
Yep.
And you get to watch all of them kind of get a happy ending, essentially.
Yep.
You know, Luther and Allison finally get together. They have a dance. They almost kiss.
Yep.
You know, Klaus is doing much better. He's getting some resolution. Everyone has a good day. And then it gets rewound. Five goes back and rewinds.
Well, the only one that's not having a good day.
Because he seldom does.
Is Five.
Yep.
Yeah. But, yeah. Harold and Cha-Cha get turned on each other. We don't know why, but we find out why.
Right.
They both get orders to eliminate the other one.
For immediate evac.
Yeah. It's good. And then, that's the other thing that happened, though, in episode 6. Vanya discovered her father's notebook in Leonard's house.
Yes.
So that's when she's like, wait a second, you've known about us. Because we didn't have talked about Leonard at all.
Right.
Because Leonard is a character that he takes a class from Vanya on how to play the violin.
Yep.
And then he kind of asks her out on a date. And then they meet up, and he makes wood stuff. And they have a little romance. You think it's an innocent relationship romance. And then slowly he knows more than he's letting on. And da-da-da-da. And then you find out that basically he was born on the same day as all of them.
Yep.
Except that was his normal birthday.
Right. He was expected.
So he's like, I have to be special like them. So when he confronts Hargraves about it, Hargraves basically humiliates him in front of everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he makes up his own uniform and his own domino mask. And he's like, I need to join you. And yeah, Hargraves is mean to him.
Yeah, Hargraves is an ass big time.
Hargraves never named any of the children, by the way. The reason that we throw around monikers like number 5 is because that's how he named them. Number 1, number 2. And he always referred to them as that. He left it to their mother, the robot, to give them actual names.
Right. And, excuse me.
So Luther.
So Leonard, he has a rough upbringing because his mom died in childbirth and his dad blames him for it.
Because that happens all the time.
Yes, it really does. And then eventually he kills his dad and he goes to jail.
Yep.
And when he gets out of jail, that's when he finds out that Hargraves is dead and he goes and digs to the dumpster and he takes the stuff that have been just thrown out previously. And then that's when this whole thing starts going into motion and he gives Vanya a fake name. Yep. And then we kind of find out that he's the cause of the apocalypse. It's his glass eye. We eventually find out, but he's the cause of the apocalypse because he makes Vanya do it.
Yep.
Cause he's the one that he takes her medication so she can't take it.
Yep.
So then it starts to wear off. And then he creates a scenario where she will be emotionally charged to use her power. I mean, he's manipulating the hell out of her tremendously.
In the comics, he was a full-on supervillain called the Maestro.
Okay.
And he arranged an orchestra around Vanya and other people that were similar. And he had a full-on plan. He was going to destroy the world. This one, I like the twist they went with this one better, where he was like an innocuous guy and kind of weaseled his way in.
And it's him where he pays this trio of thugs to beat him up, attack him, and they got drinking too much. They went overboard. That's how he loses the eye.
Yep.
And they Vanya's powers kick off, and she accidentally kills 2 of them.
Yeah.
And then the other one gets hospitalized, and eventually Leonard goes and kills him, just like Leonard kills the first chair of the violin, so Vanya will get the spot, and this and that and everything. But basically, that was in episode 6, where she finds the book, but then when 5 rewinds everything.
Basically, he goes back to the beginning of the day and intervenes, so that, because episode 6 is called The Day That Wasn't. And episode 7 is called The Day That Was.
And the Day That Was, episode 7, is when we find out who Leonard is, how he's actually Harold Jenkins, how he was born the same day. His whole story comes out in episode 7.
Yep.
And as well as it changes everything that happens throughout the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely everything.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And another thing that happens is during all of this, Klaus is kidnapped by Cha-Cha and Hazel, and they torture him trying to find out who Five is, and then there's all kinds of things that happen. I mean,
he breaks away from them with a briefcase that travels him back in time to Vietnam.
And he ends up in the Vietnam War for 8 months.
Yep.
And then
meets a guy named Dave.
Falls in love. Dave gets killed.
Yep.
He somehow manages to finally travel back to our time, and he's now all PTSD filled, but he's clean.
Yep.
And,
Finally understands Five. And
yes.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting aspect of it, because it just was.
So now all the siblings know that the end of the world is coming. All the siblings are trying to figure out who's doing it, because at first they basically do like Vanya did, and they're like, shut up, Five, you know, back off, whatever. But then they come to believe it, and they start looking into things, and Allison is the one who first figures it out. And
yeah, she's looking into Leonard and realized Leonard's not who he appears to be. Yep. And when he tries it, she tries to tell Vanya about it.
Well, she tries to tell Vanya, and Vanya's just like, you know, fuck you.
Yeah.
And she can see that Vanya has powers, because none of them know that until this point.
Right.
And Vanya's emotions start rearing up. Her powers deal with the sound around her. She can manipulate the sound and exacerbate it, direct it.
Yeah.
You know, she's like Dazzler, but just with sound instead of light and sound.
Yeah. That's true.
So she starts going a little bit nuclear on Allison, and Allison, you know, doesn't want to, but looks at her and she goes, I heard a rumor. You know, like she's going to stop her that way.
Yeah.
And Vanya slashes her throat with the bowstring of her violin.
Yeah. Well, yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
And leaves her bleeding on the floor.
Yep.
She does live, but they have to stitch up her throat. They have no idea if her powers are still going to work.
Right, because now she can't talk.
Right.
And Five gets... Seven, Vanya gets thrown back into the soundproof vault.
Yeah.
By Luther.
Yeah, because Luther's like, can't trust her.
Yeah.
Can't take this. Nope.
And basically, she sees a child version of herself. Oh, and she kills Leonard.
Yeah.
Badly.
Badly.
And she finds the book again.
Yep.
And now she finds out who Leonard really is and how he manipulated her and on and on and on and on and on. And then episode 9 changes is when we get Vanya's backstory.
Yep.
Of her powers and what she had and how they were diminished.
And how she was really an asshole of a kid.
Yeah.
Very disturbed and killing nannies. And
so she breaks out of the isolation chamber using her powers. And basically this is now when she is now evil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she
destroys the house in the most beautiful way.
Yeah, she really does. Holy yeah, shit. Actually it is. Mom dies.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, she walks through the house on this mission. Like,
yeah.
She's doing the Jason Voorhees thing or
yes.
Michael Myers, you know, just walking through and destroying shit. And, like, she'll look in a room and she'll see a memory of her brothers and sister, you know, being mean to her or being private. You know, she sees young Luther and Allison about to kiss. And they're like, get out of here.
Yeah.
And she just kills all the memories.
She's having all these flashbacks of how she was treated like shit. And then yep. She confronts Pogo.
Yeah. And basically, she starts to come around, and then she's like, did you know? And he's like, yes. He very reluctantly says yes, and she impales him.
Yeah.
Throws him right up on a giant set of antlers and kills the old monkey, which sucks because Pogo was
like
a good guy. But, yeah, that's what sets it off. And then she leaves the mansion in ruins just like he saw it in the future, but not all of the kids are dead. So they've changed the future. And that's where we lead into episode 10 and the big showdown.
Yes. Episode 10 is the final episode.
Yep.
Vanya, for whatever reason, has decided to go play her first chair at the orchestra.
Well, it was that concert that night.
Yeah. And
this is what she's been building towards.
And and whatever it is with her playing the violin, it's building some sort of power.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, she builds off noise.
Yes.
Sound. And an orchestra produces a ton of sound.
And essentially, like, the siblings are there. Oh, when the house is collapsing, Ben saves
Diego.
Ben saves Diego.
Yep.
From the falling debris. And Diego credits
Klaus.
Klaus. God, I think it's Lucas. Credits Klaus for saving him, and he's like, no, Ben did it. No one believes him that Ben did. No, Ben's been here, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
And then they're in the theater. Vanya is playing the song. There, you know, when she stops, when the song's over, she's going to explode, and it's going to kill everybody.
Yeah, for some reason at this point, they're worried about the moon.
No, they haven't talked about the moon at all.
I thought that they were worried about the moon being destroyed.
Not at all.
Okay.
That she was going to and destroy the Earth.
Okay.
And because there was nothing, like, I didn't see anything to do with the moon until at the end.
Okay.
But all, I was like,
I thought they were talking about that.
No, I don't see, I don't remember that at all. You'll find out. You're rewatching it.
Yeah. I thought they said something at one point about, you know, like the Earth was destroyed because of the moon or something. I don't know.
I see. I don't remember that.
Oh, yeah. I'll be watching it again.
So. Anyways, so Klaus makes Ben appear because there's too many commissioned soldiers to stop them all. And Ben appears and uses his horror powers with his tentacles, demons, and this and that, and kills them all. And all the siblings can see him, and they're just like, damn, okay. Yeah. So then they devise a plan to stop Vanya, which includes all of them. Like,
let's all jump her at once.
Basically, yeah, they're all distract her, and so that Allison can walk up behind her to shoot her.
Yep.
And she can't shoot her in the head.
Nope.
And she ends up shooting the gun next to her ear, which is enough to break things, and that's when she turns and all the power...
Because it deafens her.
All the power zaps out and shoots through the roof and hits the moon.
Right.
And
then it breaks off a giant chunk.
At first they were, oh, we did it. We stopped everything. That's why I don't think they had anything to do with the moon, because they stopped everything. Right. It's cool.
Right.
But then they're like, oh, wait, what's that?
Giant asteroid coming towards the Earth.
Big chunk of moon coming at the Earth. Yeah. Yep. And you see all the debris hitting the Earth and exploding this and that. And the piece that's coming is like, oh, well, that's going to destroy the Earth.
Yeah.
And Ben, number five, uses his powers to zip them all away.
Well, that's what he said. He's like, I've never taken people with me before, but I think I can.
Yeah.
But we all have to be together. And it's a really awesome, beautiful scene because they do the camera panning around and they're all holding onto each other and the piece of the moon's coming down.
Even Ben's there. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, the lights are going off and it's like, oh, is the time travel going to work? And as the camera circles around, they're now all their children versions.
Yes.
Including Vanya.
Ben. Yeah.
And Ben.
And the piece of the Earth hits the moon. I mean, the piece of the moon hits the Earth, and then the Earth is basically starting to,
yep,
like the fallout effect from it, and it's getting closer to where they are, and then...
Dude, and also, again, like, they did so much in this show that they didn't have to do, but they did it anyway. So, like, they could have just been like, oh, you know, it hits the Earth, and they vanish, and, you know. But no, they show it hit the Earth, and then they show different things. Like, they show Cha-Cha, you know, picking up the phone and being like, oh, come on. And then you just see the wave of fire come right behind and just incinerate her. Incinerate everybody.
Yep.
And we haven't even touched on everything. I mean,
no, we haven't. There's
a beautiful side story with Hazel wanting to be done with assassinating.
Yes, and he beats a girl who works at the donut shop, Agnes, and he falls in love with her. And
they're going to escape, but Cha-Cha's not having it.
Yeah.
Seeing number five at the agency or the commission and his little trick... You know, he's the one that pitted Hazel and Cha-Cha against each other.
Yes. I mean,
because the commission was actually sending Hazel and Cha-Cha to protect, what's his name there? The guy who...
Harold Jenkins.
Yeah.
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 Because they, we got to protect Harold Jenkins because that's...
That's how the world is going to be destroyed, is he's bringing Vanya to that. And so he, number five, changed those orders to say, you know, kill each other. And then... tried to kill Kate Walsh by tossing a grenade into the room with her. And she's like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
But then she comes back later with a giant scar on her face. But, you know, as she says, she's like, I'm the time commissioner.
Right.
Of course, you know. So there's a lot, so much in here that happened that we didn't even touch upon. I love this. I thought it was a great 10-episode series. I hope they come back for another one. I'd love to see further adventures, see what happened when they time traveled. You know, are they all children again? Is Ben alive? Oh, yeah. I want more.
Yeah, I'd really be interested to see where they're going to go next. Because are they going to try to save the Earth or just kind of wrap things up?
Right. You know, how far back did he take them? And what is that going to mean for the future? It turned out, by the way, that Hargreaves killed himself.
Oh, shit. Yeah, yeah.
He shut off the protocols in Grace, the mom,
yeah,
so that she couldn't administer CPR, first aid, anything, and killed himself so that his children would all come together because, again, he had seen the future to the point where he knew that he had to raise these kids, they were going to go off, they were going to hate him, and then he would have to get them back together.
Yeah.
By doing this, this was the only way he could get them back together, is to kill himself and have them all show up to try to figure out how it happened.
They never explained the spontaneous pregnancies and childbirth, though.
Nope.
Which is interesting.
Or where all the rest of them are, you know.
Which maybe that's what they're going to explore in further seasons.
Right.
It'd be interesting.
I really enjoyed it.
I haven't heard anything about it being renewed for a second season or anything, though.
Nor have I. But then again, think about The Haunting of Hill House and how phenomenal that was. And it was just recently that they announced a second season for that.
So. That's true. That's true. Cool. All right. Well, I guess it sums it up for me this week.
Yeah. And next week, we will definitely cover The Passage.
Yeah, it was a good episode.
It was a good episode, and we've got two more left this season. So yep. I think that'll actually work out well. We'll have three episodes to talk about.
Yeah. Nice.
That could be our focus next week.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, well, cool. I'm on the Twitter at SuperstarML.
I'm at The Quantum Geek, G33K.
And that's it.
Talk to you later, everybody.
Boing.